Hello and welcome to our CrowsCast webinar series. My name is Elisa Lamel and I am the legal content specialist here at Crows Financial Services. Today's topic is breaking down LTCI state partnership policies, hosted by Strategic Relations Director Don Levin. Before we get started, we have a few housekeeping items. If you have any questions during today's webinar, go ahead and type those in the questions section of the GoToWebinar toolbar so we can answer them at the end of the presentation. Next, you can find a copy of today's PowerPoint in the handout section of the GoToWebinar toolbar. We also ask that you please complete the post-webinar survey that will pop up on your screens at the end of the presentation, as we truly do appreciate that feedback. And now let's get to today's presentation. Don, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Elisa, and welcome everybody. Hope you walk away with some golden nuggets that will help you bring long-term care insurance into your practice. As Elisa said, I'm Don Levin. I'm the Strategic Relations Director, and I'm here basically to work with you. So if you have questions or concerns about how to bring long-term care insurance into your practice, feel free to reach out to me or to Aaron or to David, and we'll take care of you. So without further ado, for those of you who don't know Crouse or maybe new to Crouse, we provide attorneys with solutions. And for years and years, it's been primarily in the crisis planning mode. And that's with Medicaid compliant annuities, funeral expense trusts, et cetera. And about 2 years ago, the decision was made to create the other bookend and to bring in pre-crisis planning in the form of long-term care insurance, short-term care, and other related insurance products. So first and foremost, we consider ourselves an educational resource for you. And with 30 plus years of experience, 40 plus professionals that you can reach into, our staff with questions or concerns, but over 400 to 500 MCA cases a month now with long-term care as an added resource for you. You know, we're expecting to see that those numbers grow immensely. So, but we're very excited to be your partner and not just a product provider. So there are a lot of questions regarding long-term care insurance, specifically what state partnership is. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history and availability of state partnership today. We're going to define the requirements for a long-term care insurance policy to be eligible for partnership. Essentially, it's pretty straightforward. And then how these policies interact with Medicaid. So the long-term care industry has actually been around almost 50 years, since 1974, but it finds its roots going back to 1935 with the Social Security Act when it was signed into law. Things to note is that while beneficiaries can start seeing benefits from the government at age 65, the life expectancy back then was only 63. And there were 16 workers for every one beneficiary. Today, unfortunately, that number is down to about 2.5 workers per beneficiary. Hence the reason the Medicare, Social Security entitlement platforms are seeing more use. They're also seeing, you know, their numbers diminish at a greater rate. So again, it was Social Security was designed as a supplemental retirement income. Unfortunately, today it accounts for about 60% of primary source of income for most folks. So 1965, Medicare and Medicaid were established. And again, very quickly, Medicare is federal health insurance for those 65 and older or who are disabled. And unfortunately, I received my Medicare card last week in the mail, and that is kind of disturbing psychologically for me because I still think I'm 19. But Medicare, federal health insurance for those folks who qualify. Medicaid, on the other hand, is welfare. It's for the indigent. It is for folks who don't have assets and income to pay their own way. And we'll talk about Medicaid in greater detail a little bit later in the webinar. But 1974 was a very pivotal year because the federal government stepped up and really with their actions created the privatization of long-term care, and several insurance carriers stepped up as well and started offering very basic long-term care insurance policies. And we kind of burbled along for any number of years till 1992, when four states, New York, California, Connecticut, and Indiana, were given the opportunity to provide partnership programs to their citizens. And essentially, the way it worked is that for those people who purchased a private long-term care insurance policy with the requisite inflation factor, the requisite daily benefit amount, they would be able to utilize these funds, and for every dollar dispersed by the carrier, they would be able to shelter a like amount of their private estate. And I do have a good graphic towards the ends of the presentation that will really illustrate that for you. Now, what's interesting is the very next year, 1993, OBRA 93 hit the street. The Omnibus Reconciliation Act, as it's formally known, it basically improved the quality of private long-term care insurance and implemented the tax incentives for people to purchase these plans. So again, Medicaid is federally and state funded, but state administered. So there are literally 50 different Medicaid programs in the country. What they have in common is they all look to Uncle Sam for the vast majority of their funding. The federal government, recognizing that Medicaid is the number one line item in every state budget, it's what's causing a lot of red ink. It's what causes a lot of red ink for the federal government. They needed to create an incentive for people to purchase long-term care insurance. And they did this by creating tax incentives. So based on age, people can deduct some, if not all, of their long-term care insurance premiums off their federal tax return, and the states in turn have their own way of dealing with it. So that was a huge stepping stone. In 2001, I was actually given the regional sales manager role for the western third of the state of Ohio, headquartered in Cincinnati. The next year, I picked up the eastern half of Indiana. Having half my region with partnership, the other half without, was incredibly different because my agents in Ohio were quite upset at the ease, or the apparent ease, with which their counterparts in Indiana were being able to consummate sales of long-term care insurance policies. That tax incentive was huge, and the fact that these policies were growing, you know, in terms of their pool of benefits as well as their daily benefits, that was a really great feature for these plans. The next major change that occurred was in 2005 with the Deficit Reduction Act. And just as it sounds, this was legislation created by the federal government intending to reduce some of the deficit. What it meant to us in the long-term care industry is that the feds cut $40 billion, with a B, dollars of authorized funding for the Medicaid programs. But more importantly, it provided every state the option of enacting their own partnership program and additional federal funding to expand community-based care. This was a huge game changer for the industry, as well as individuals who wanted to protect their own future. 2021 was a bit of a surreal experience for those of us in the industry. The state of Washington created the Washington Cares Fund, which was literally a payroll tax that everyone over age 18 who was a W-2 employee was subject to, and they were required to pay 0.58% on all W-2 income with no cap. So if you were earning $1,000 a year, you paid $58. If you earned $1 million a year, as quite a few folks in the Washington area do, particularly in Seattle, you know, you're paying $5,800 a year, all for the same benefit level. That was the rather peculiar part. So regardless of what you pay in, you all get the same amount out. And that amount is limited to a lifetime benefit of $36,500, which in terms of what actual needs and costs are, is a pimple. I mean, that essentially is about 3 months worth of coverage of full-time care. So that was extremely problematic. But there was a tremendous response, because if you owned a private insurance policy, you could be exempted and opt out of paying that tax. So needless to say, we were inundated. And as some of you may be aware, literally every carrier in the industry ultimately was overwhelmed, pulled out of Washington, and was so overwhelmed with existing applications in the system that sales throughout the country were literally on hold. There were approximately 15 states who are at one stage or another in terms of offering their own solution to what we call the tsunami of long-term care that's coming. And lots of lessons learned in Washington state that they're all benefiting from. And so I can assure you that the states who are being more proactive right now, California, Minnesota, New York, they are not going to allow that same situation to arise. And essentially, anybody who wants to opt out of the tax and receive an exemption, they're going to have to own this private long-term care insurance prior to the enactment of this legislation. What this means to you, to me, and to the long-term care insurance industry is that we need to be talking to our clients now and getting this valuable coverage in place today, rather than waiting for, you know, the legislature in these various states to say, surprise, here it is. I know California is looking at a 2% payroll tax. So literally about four times what Washington is taking. And there's about five different models being floated around in California. And with the size of their workforce, we know that that could be a huge opportunity. But as I said, there are about 15 total states right now who are looking at implementing some form of tax, basically to create additional funding for Medicaid to help those who don't have the means to take care of themselves. Next slide, please. So, essentially, I've always believed that there are three ways to pay for long-term care. One, be very rich. One, be very poor. Or third, be insured. The number one cause of bankruptcy among seniors is medical bills. And under that category, we would obviously include long-term care costs. So they deplete their assets paying for long-term care. They deprive their family and themselves of the legacy they may have dreamed about. And they ultimately end up indigent and on a welfare platform called Medicaid. Now, there are a number of financial advisors out there who say, if you look at it by age 60, you're fine. If you look at it by age 55, you're fine. But what we're finding is that the younger your clients investigate this, regardless of how long they pay into the plan, they're going to get all their money back typically within the first 90 days of claim. It's just one of those mathematical certainties, kind of like the rule of 72. But more importantly, and I can't emphasize this enough, the importance of buying when they are healthy. So obviously when they are younger, they're healthier, the premiums are cheaper, and we can get them the coverage that they want. So purchasing long-term care insurance when they're relatively young, in their 40s, is a far easier proposition than waiting till they're more health impaired in their 60s. I mean, for those who are between the ages of 40 and 45, we're still looking at about a 9% decline rate. But when you compare that to their 70 to 75 year old parents, the decline rate is upwards of 59%. So again, while they pay for it with dollars, they buy it with their health. And what's nice about long-term care policies, more so today than ever before, is that they can be customized to include, you know, those riders and features and include those benefits that are meaningful to the clients. And most notably, afford themselves the protections of state partnership. I'm often asked when the perfect time to buy long-term care insurance is, and my answer really hasn't changed in the last 25 years. 8 weeks before a claim would arise. And I know that sounds silly, but since we don't have a crystal ball, the answer is modified to the younger, the better. The other thing to note is that these policies are not one size fits all. And so we emphasize the importance of tailoring them to fit the individual or the couple. And so their needs, wants, desires can be addressed. And if they want to co-insure part of the risk, we can do that. If they want to insure all of the risk, we can do that. If they want to avail themselves of just the services and they're not too upset about spending their own funds in a trade-off to save premium, that's okay too. So we have that ability to tailor the plans to fit the needs, wants, and desires of the individual or couple. Next slide, please. So, main topic of today, what is partnership? Essentially, as I said earlier, it was an awareness on the part of the federal government that something needed to happen to protect the Medicaid system. And with 79 million baby boomers and 72 million Gen Xers on their heels, if the boomers all hit Medicaid for their care, the system will absolutely, without a doubt, collapse. So essentially, partnership is a collaboration between the Medicaid programs of the various states and private insurers. And in the perfect world, someone who purchases a long-term care policy, particularly a partnership policy, will have the benefits they need to pay for their care. And when they die, they will not have dissipated their assets, leaving a financial legacy to their family and to any charitable institutions they may have identified. And but more importantly, they will have avoided Medicaid. Now, there are instances where policyholders will go on claim. They will spend a long period of time on claim and they will exhaust their benefits. And at that point, they're back to, do I pay for it myself or am I eligible for Medicaid? But ideally, those folks who have purchased long-term care insurance policies, the vast majority of them have avoided Medicaid. But the beauty of partnership is that for every dollar expended by the carrier on their behalf, they get to shelter a dollar of their estate for themselves. And so they get to keep these additional assets in addition to maintaining their eligibility for Medicaid. Next slide, please. the most notable benefit of partnership is the fact that we do get to protect these additional assets. These plans are all tax qualified. So again, you get to deduct the cost of the long-term care insurance premium, again, based on age. Every year the IRS does project a new set of numbers as to what the deductibility factors are, but it provides more coverage beyond the benefit levels of the long-term care insurance policy. And these plans are portable. That was another major shortcoming of the Washington CARES Act. For a Washington citizen to access their, albeit limited, pool of benefits, they must be in the state of Washington. So if work transfers them, if retirement dictates that they move out of the state of Washington, they forfeit those benefits that they would have otherwise enjoyed. That is a major problem, as far as I am concerned, with the Washington CARES Act. Next slide, please. So in order to qualify for state partnership protection, the policy does have to have certain elements. It does have to be a traditional long-term care insurance policy. It must include inflation protection. Now, originally in those four states, California, New York, Indiana, and Connecticut, it was required 5%. And 5% was the compound factor that most plans enjoyed in the 1990s and even into the early 2000s. But as we entered into the zero interest environment, it was very difficult for carriers to continue to pay or to provide, you know, a 5% ROI on these policies. And so because these policies are regulated by the federal government and the 5% was still required, essentially what the carriers did is they priced the 5% out of the marketplace. So 3% is the new 5%. Most of the plans we've written in the last 7 to 8 years have 3% inflation factors on them. Some states actually go as low as only requiring 1% to still maintain partnership qualification. So again, it's a state-by-state basis, and we have to verify whatever state you're operating in as to what the requirement is. But it must have an inflation protection and conform with the other federal guidelines in terms of what triggers benefits. So typically that's 2 of 6 activities of daily living. So if your client got out of bed in the morning, that's transferring. If they felt the bed and it was dry, that means they have no issues with continence. They go into the bathroom, they use the toilet by themselves, they bathe themselves, they dress themselves, they went downstairs and they ate breakfast by themselves. If they needed help with 2 of those 6 things, their benefits would begin. Likewise, if they required some assistance because they are a potential harm to themselves because of some form of cognitive impairment. Cognitive impairment is a $2 phrase meaning something's not working from the neck up. 2 forms of cognitive impairment. The organic sources, which are chronic, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Lewy body, some form of dementia, or non-organic. Now that could be environmental. It could be a traumatic brain injury as the result of an accident or some other incident. It could be some form of depression wherein, you know, they are absolutely incapable of functioning and they're in the fetal position on the sofa. So some form of cognitive impairment or assistance with 2 of 6 activities of daily living will trigger those benefits. And again, those are all federal guidelines that the carriers must observe to maintain their status as a partnership eligible plan. Anecdotally, again, no matter how long they pay for this policy, they will likely recoup all of their premium within the first 90 days of claim. Next slide, please. Again, like everything else in society, prices go up. The inflation protection rider that are attached to these plans are essentially created to keep the plans current with inflation. And the 3% riders of the last few years have done an adequate basis of doing that. And they've accounted for rising inflation. The goal here is to protect the policyholder from increased costs, and they're having to supplement their policies with more out-of-pocket payments. The other major concern is eligibility for Medicaid. And again, all the states have varying requirements, but on average, to qualify for Medicaid, an applicant cannot have more than $2,000 of assets. Think about that, $2,000 of assets. Now, if they're part of a couple, we don't want to impoverish the community spouse. So there are allowances so that community spouse can retain the home, can retain a car. That's why you see a lot of very expensive cars in facility parking lots, because there is no dollar restriction on what the cost of these cars can, or the value of these cars can be. But what a lot of people neglect to remember is that in addition to a threshold for assets, there is also a threshold for income. So if your client does have a fixed source of income, a pension in particular, I had a client years ago who made $13 a month too much to qualify for Medicaid, which forced the issue and prompted, you know, his family to provide a lot of unpaid long-term care to both he and his wife eventually. So next slide, please. So additional federal guidelines, tax qualification, which again is a great factor, the benefit triggers that we talked about, and then other defined conditions. So the federal government has taken great pains to establish guidelines on facility, on home health care, assisted living facilities, community care, daycare, and such. All of these conditions are reflected in the policies created by the individual carriers. Next slide. So which states have partnership at this time? The short answer is all of them except Alaska, Hawaii, Mississippi, and the District of Columbia. I was actually in Seattle in January of 2012 when the state of Washington enacted their partnership plan. And again, sales took off because, again, estate planning attorneys, CPAs, financial advisors all viewed this as an opportunity to safeguard the portfolio. So even if somebody was willing to become self-insured and to maintain that risk, by buying a partnership plan, it was a way to leverage the portfolio and to shelter those assets. And obviously, the larger the policy, the more assets were sheltered. And so people would often buy additional coverage that they might not otherwise do, because they simply wanted to protect the portfolio. Next slide. So one of the great misconceptions, and whether we're talking to people retiring from the military who believe that the Veterans Administration is going to take care of them, or the government's going to take care of me one way or shape or form. Well, a large part of that is a myth. You know, Medicare, as I said earlier, is federal health insurance for those who are 65 and older, hospital and doctor coverage, or the disabled. And generally, Medicare will only cover skilled nursing home care after a hospital stay of at least 3 nights. And that's not 3 nights of observation, that's 3 nights of treatment. That's the latest loophole that we need to be very mindful of. So 3 nights of overnight stay in the hospital for treatment, which then prompts a doctor to mandate that this individual go to a skilled facility. They will pay up to 20 days in its entirety. And then from days 21 through 100, that's when the individual will pay their portion of it, about $160 a day, usually covered by the Med Sup plan that they own. So for that matter, coverage under Medicare is extremely limited. And the average stay in a facility covered by Medicare has really not changed much over the last 15 years. It's averaged about 17 days, after which the individual's on their own financially. Medicaid, on the other hand, it's welfare. It does contribute to long-term care, but it does require them to spend down their assets to pay for care. And as we said, most states, it's that $2,000 threshold. These savings, these assets cannot be given away. They cannot be sold or transferred. And because of Medicaid fraud, a phrase you've probably heard, because it has been so rampant, the 3 year or 36 month look back period has actually been extended to a full 5 year, 60 month look back. So when someone applies for Medicaid, they will look at the transfers he or she has made in the past 60 months. And if they have transferred assets out of their estate, they will be held accountable for that amount and they will be penalized a like amount for any number of months based on the level of care that they require. So not a good thing. So the public programs are not a viable alternative from the government, but state partnership is. Next slide, please. So again, Medicaid continues to be the primary source of payment for long-term care in this country. As recently as 2020, they accounted for a little over 42% of all long-term care costs. That is a staggering number. But again, to meet these strict qualifications, to include that limitation of $2,000 in countable assets, that's the key phrase that we're going to take away from this slide, is that if they have countable assets in excess of $2,000, they must spend these assets down to below $2,000 in order to qualify for coverage. And again, they cannot give these assets away. They can't hide these assets. And if they do, they're guilty of fraud. Now, this is where Krauss again can step up big and help you and your clients. If in fact they do have assets that exceed this, there are Medicaid compliant annuities whereby these assets are put into an annuity, the annuity income paid to the community spouse, and eligibility for Medicaid is then available. So, but that's a different topic for a different webinar. Next slide, please. So again, partnership was the recognition by the federal government and the state government that something needed to be done to keep people away from the Medicaid system, because Medicaid is the number one line item in every state budget, and it is the reason most states operate in red ink. And this partnership is meant to encourage residents to purchase or privatize their long-term care through the purchase of a long-term care insurance policy and limit the financial burden on the states. Next slide. So again, the example we have here for you, Ruth went on claim. Her long-term care insurance policy had a benefit pool of $300,000 thanks to the inflation rider. She required care for many months and eventually exhausted all of her long-term care insurance benefits. When she applied for Medicaid, she was able to retain $302,000 in countable assets. Why? Because she was able to maintain the $2,000 Medicaid allowance plus a dollar for dollar sheltering of the amount of her long-term care insurance benefits. So even with $302,000 of assets, she was then eligible for Medicaid. Next slide, please. So if a family had an estate of $500,000, click, and they were self-insuring, they could very easily deplete that entire estate. Click, and then be eligible for Medicaid. Unfortunately, there's no family legacy. Not what most people are working their lifetime to do. So, different scenario. Now they have a long-term care insurance policy valued at $300,000. They start using that $300,000. Click. And again, I want to use the insurance company's money first. So we're going to deplete that $300,000, ideally by building a shorter, fatter plan, because as long as there are benefits in the pool, we can stretch the coverage out. So if they have $6,000 worth a month benefits and they're only using $3,000 a month, instead of a three-year plan, maybe it'll last 6 years. Whereas if you have a low dollar amount stretched out over a longer period of time, they may have to supplement those funds with out-of-pocket money. I don't want to do that. I want to use the insurance company's money first. So we've depleted that $300,000. Oh, now we're looking at that $500,000 estate, but they only have to spend down $200,000 of it because they've sheltered a like amount in the family estate equal to the amount of coverage offered by the long-term care insurance plan. Click. So the individual who needs care is eligible for Medicaid, and that $300,000 remains in the family for whatever legacy he or she intended it to be. Next slide. So partnership, even with the great benefits that it offers, it's not for everybody. We know this. Some individuals may prefer a different policy design. You know, they may prefer a policy that offers life insurance and a death benefit as well as a cash value. Those plans are available. They may decide that an annuity with a long-term care rider works for them. Or again, because of that threshold related to income, or because they just have so many assets that they will never qualify for Medicaid because they can't spend it down or get rid of all the assets, partnership may not be for them. That's okay. But regardless of their budget, their goals, or their projected care needs, we can tailor a plan to fit their specific situation. And that's one of the benefits of working with Kraus, is because if you call in and talk to one of our account managers, they're going to be able to prepare illustrations and quotes for you for both traditional and non-traditional long-term care insurance products that will fit your client's needs based on the information you share with us. Next slide. So at this time, we're going to open up the lines and Elisa will handle your questions, and hopefully you'll ask questions that I have answers for. So if you have questions, use your chat and send your questions into Elisa.
All right. So we did have a couple really good questions come in during the presentation. The first one you were touching on was regarding the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. Question is, doesn't Medicare cover some level of long-term care if there was a hospital stay first?
And the answer is yes. But again, the most that Medicare will cover is 100 days, and that's 20 days at full Medicare expense, and then days 21 through 100 with the patient contributing their share, approximately $165 a day. But as I said earlier, the average amount of benefits provided by Medicare for long-term care, it only averages about 17 days. Because again, it's all predicated on the patient making continued progress, but once they plateau, Medicare removes their support. So not the solution we want it to be.
All right, next question we did have, how would I know whether my client's long-term care insurance plan is tax qualified and the premiums deductible?
If the policy was purchased before January 1st, 1997, they basically grandfathered all those policies in. Policies purchased on or after January 1st, 1997 have to meet a number of those federal standards that we identified. And so again, the benefit triggers, the 2 of 6 ADLs, the cognitive impairment, offering inflation protection, and a number of other features like that, as long as they are compliant with those requirements, partnership does not require any additional premium. So it's not a rider or anything like that. As long as the plan contains those necessary elements, they are automatically partnership eligible and thus tax qualified.
Okay, it looks like maybe there's a follow-up question. What are the annual deductions associated with long-term care insurance premiums?
I used to memorize this, but the IRS changes it every year, and they usually issue it November-ish for the following year. And they actually increased the 2023 tax deductible limits by about 6% over 2022. So for attained age before the close of the taxable year. So my birthday is in September, my wife's is October. So we always were able to take advantage of the higher limits. So age 40 and under, the maximum deduction is only $480. That's up from $450. 41 to 50, it's $890. Age 61 to 70, significantly different, $4,770 per person, up from $4,510. And age 71 and older, $5,960 per person, up from $5,640. So, most premiums, you know, if you're talking to people in their early 50s, the policies are going to be largely deductible. Once they hit age 60, you know, I can guarantee you they'll be writing their premiums off.
Okay, another great question here about premiums. If my client is self-employed, are the premiums deductible regardless of the AGI threshold?
The short answer is yes. If someone is self-employed or if they own a C corp and they're a small business, for example, they can take the amount of the policy premium as a deduction as long as they made a net profit. And medical expenses do not necessarily need to have exceeded the 7.5% threshold of adjusted gross income. So for small business owners, you know, partnership is another great plan. If they're 55 years old, looking to retire in 10 years, and they'd like to walk away with a paid up long-term care insurance policy upon retirement, you know, we do have the option of putting them into a 10-year payout of that plan. And if they're a C corp or they're self-employed, they can write the whole premium off and then ride off into the sunset down the road with a completely paid up long-term care policy.
Okay, perfect. And we'll probably take one more question here. How are benefits of indemnity insurance plans taxed?
There aren't many indemnity plans left on the traditional side. I mean, typically, if you're looking at one of the linked benefits or asset-based products that do offer indemnity, and the difference between a reimbursement policy and an indemnity, you know, the reimbursement is just what it says. They will reimburse expenses paid out, whether it's the client making that payment and then submitting bills for reimbursement, or they're assigning their benefits to the company providing care. In any event, it's a dollar for dollar reimbursement. if they own an indemnity plan, as soon as they are eligible for claim, they're going to receive the full flat amount of that monthly benefit. And these benefits, they're not taxed, they're not included in income, except for any amount that exceeds their total qualified long-term care expenses. So if they're receiving $5,000 a month in indemnity payments, but they only have $4,000 a month in actual costs, technically $1,000 of it would be taxable. Or if the amount that they're receiving exceeds the 2023 allowance of $420 per day, whichever is greater. So again, there are advantages to owning these plans. And the traditional plans are cleaner in terms of taxes because, for example, the hybrid plans, because they're built on a life insurance chassis, they're typically not eligible for tax deductions except for that premium attributable to the long-term care rider costs.
Okay, perfect. That is all the time we have for questions today. If we didn't quite get to your question, we will follow up with you later this week. A recording of this webinar will be available shortly through your Attorney Access account. If you're not yet a member of Attorney Access, head on over to MedicaidAnnuity.com/join to get started. And thank you to everyone for joining us today and for completing that post-webinar survey. Have a great afternoon.